Welcome back, everybody, for another episode of California Labor Law Odyssey. A strange and murky world that we're entering into that you're not going to believe. With our host, Tom Manzin, the one who's seen more of it than any of us would ever want to see. And has built an organization called Cavi around it to try and bring some of this to light. So welcome, our guest, our host, for this next episode, Tom Manzin. Hey.
How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing good. Identify yourself. So you're president of a company. You're not just a professional organizer or attorney. There's so many people that found these organizations, and that's all they do in their whole life, or they run organizations or whatever. This was an outgrowth of an experience that happened to you in your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Tom Manzo. I'm founder of the California Business and Industrial Alliance, and we've been in existence about 1 year and 1 month. And I also run a manufacturing company called Timely Industries. We make pre-finished steel door frames.
Okay. And how many employees roughly do you have?
Or what we have 200 employees.
Okay.
The company started in 1971. Everything we do is made in the USA. We don't import anything, including our steel. Prior to all the tariffs and everything like that, we were bringing in U.S. American-made steel to begin with.
Good guys. All right. And you brought along another good guy here, your general counsel. Identify him and have him join the conversation.
Welcome, Rob Peppel.
Yeah, my name is Rob Peppel. I am counsel for Cavia. I also work as a labor and employment litigator at the firm of Epstein, Becker & Green, and I'm just along for Tom's ride.
All right. Well, it's been an interesting ride so far. This is episode two of this odyssey. And in episode one, we really tried to unpack, and I'm not even sure we did it full justice in a full hour, this law called PAGA. Just remind us, what is PAGA?
It's the Private Attorney General Act, and they call it the Sue Your Boss Law.
Because in 2004, the state of California, in its ultimate wisdom, decided they didn't have enough people or money or talent or time to go find all the labor law violations. So they're going to deputize every employee of every company to find these violations, to hire an attorney, to notify us of that a violation. And if we do nothing else, then they can sue on behalf of the state.
Well, I mean, just think about it. I mean, if you allow trial attorneys to enforce labor laws, it's probably an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, because they get big bucks. And most of these cases, as you say, are so difficult. Two problems to them. One, they're so expensive to defend. Two, the labor laws are so filled with so much minutia and detail that many companies probably don't know how to, haven't been complying with them to that letter of the law. They might be 2 seconds late on lunches. They might be 2 minutes late on lunches. They might accidentally give somebody the wrong employee ID number on their pay stub or something like that. A whole realm of these, what we would think of as relatively minor violations, can institute one of these actions and lead to millions and millions of dollars of potential liability and penalties, right?
It's very complex and it's very overwhelming. And, you know, since I started my group, I've done a lot of different op-eds. I've been on some radio shows. And the biggest reason, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to do this show and do the podcast is because you just sometimes don't have enough time to explain a lot of these details and what it is.
Boy, we found that out. Go listen to episode one for anybody who wants to get educated on what PAGA is. And we just, every time I'd ask a question, you're like, well, wait, but there's four more examples. Because PAGA doesn't just empower the employee to potentially sue their boss on behalf of the state. It then opens the door to all sorts of discovery, which can lead to even more violations and more problems. So as in many of the cases that you said, an employee gets fired for good cause, but it's angry and goes find his attorney, and the attorney says, I can't help you. You were fired for good cause, but show me your pay stuff. Show me your this. Maybe there's some other stuff we can find. And in the process, we'll find even more stuff. And then you go back and send a couple lawyers in and say, we're going to sue for this amount of money, and here's what we found. And the firm says, we can't fight that. It's too expensive, too time-consuming here. And then, well, how much you want? $1 million? Go away.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm getting calls now almost daily, almost every day. And this law is being, first off, it shouldn't be a law to begin with. And second off, it's getting so over abused that it's not even funny. And something has to be done. It has to change.
Is this a law that only exists in California?
California is the only one, although they're trying to import it, export it to New York. And New York's talking about it.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about your story. What motivated you as president of this company called Timely, where you make, what do you make, doors? And
door frames.
Door frames.
Yeah, door frames.
And you got a couple of employees. You're a typical company here in Southern California. We think there's, what, quarter of a million, half a million of you guys? Nobody knows exactly how many there are, but there's a lot of companies of your size.
A lot of small to medium-sized businesses.
Right.
And, you know, Timely, we took great pride in being a family-run business. It's owned by Bob Day. His son's involved, Jesse Day. And it's been in their family since it started. And you
Which
know
is
that
a while back in the what the
1971.
Okay.
And that was one thing that I, you know, asked the owner when I was granted the opportunity to run his company, you know, how do we want to do things? And he always tell me, Tom, run it like a family, make decisions like a family. And to put that into perspective, the average length of employment for a lot of the Timely employees is 24 years.
Wow.
We've had people there as long as they're working there right now. We have three that have been at 38 years. We also have 52 immediate family members and 26 extended family members.
Wow. So this really is a family business.
So, okay. I mean, a lot of people will say, hey, don't bring in too much family. Don't hire too much family. Well, we chose not to take that path.
You are what every politician, left, right, or center, wants to see happen more of. Small to mid-sized businesses are the foundation of our American system. It's what empowers people. It allows people to rise up and claim a piece of the American pie here. And
everything made in the United States. We're not importing anything.
There you go. So
that's
all
very, very rare.
Good, plaudable things. I don't think I'm saying anything that anybody wouldn't agree with. Now, in the process of creating this law, how many of you 300,000 businesses here in Southern California are at risk of being sued?
I would say everybody's at risk of being sued.
Everybody.
And the problem is the labor law digest, it's so thick, it's hard for people to read. Most people now, companies need to talk to attorneys, you know, hey, can I fire this guy? What should I do? How do I handle the situation? And any labor law violation can lead to a PAGA wage and hour lawsuit.
And now somebody's suing on behalf of not just themselves or even the category, a class of people in like a typical class action suit. They're suing on behalf of the state of California, which allows them extra power to go in and investigate.
Get all the information you need.
Right.
To get all the information.
And once they do, they often find other things and it multiplies.
Not often, always.
Always. All right, so tell me your story.
Well,
this happened to you.
We took great pride in offering a flexible work schedule. It was something that we thought was great. And
what everybody supposedly dreams of these days. Yeah. And I can accommodate if I got to go pick up my kids or I want to do something else. I can be flexible.
Well, our flexible work schedule actually was in the factory, which a lot of people don't do.
Hmm.
You know, so people could come in at 5, 5:30, 6, 6:30, 7. We actually had people in the offices that would come in as late as 9 o'clock. So now,
and they were what? Given, as long as you accomplish this in that period of time,
we're just
okay.
Everybody, teamwork, we worked together, you know, the job. We wanted to get out. You know, we knew we had to ship out these frames. They were due to be shipped today. And we get that done. That's all we cared about.
Right.
So the main thing was, you know, a lot of people want to take lunch together. I mean, you've been working with somebody for 15, 20, 25 years.
But we all arrive at a different time.
You've got, you know, a cousin, an uncle. We've got three generations of a family working there right now. Hey, I want to go have lunch with my grandpa today.
But grandpa came in at a different time than Junior did.
Correct. So what we did is everybody took their lunch at 11. The lunch actually got moved from 11 to 11:10 because the lunch truck, who had been coming to Timely for 30-some years, had some type of a delay, and they said, is there any way we can come at 11:10 instead of 11?
Sure.
And everybody agreed, yeah, just come at 11:10.
Okay.
So what happens is you got people that start at 5.
Employees wanted this. Management's okay with it. Why not?
Right. Employees start at 5. They take their lunch at 11:10. They are 1 hour and 10 minutes late for lunch, according to
the law.
According to the law. If somebody started at, you know, 6, they are 10 minutes late.
All right. And this never occurred to you or to them. This was just
never occurred to any of us. Any of us. Now, the other thing that we did, and we made this more of a fun thing. So Safety is very important.
First lesson, don't do things for fun. Yeah. All right.
So first lesson is don't do anything nice for your employees in California.
Yeah, that's right.
Denied all those urges to be a good person. Yeah, you're okay. Penalized for it.
The voice of the cynical attorney speaks. All right. Yeah, but maybe not so much cynical. All right. So you, what's the fun thing you did?
Well, we had a safety incentive if somebody stays safe. And we did quarterly lunches. We had giveaways. We did safety t-shirts. Every Wednesday we all wear safety t-shirts.
Motivators, incentives.
Yeah, and I mean the amount of this incentive or bonus was about, I don't know, maybe $800 a year. You know, just a way of saying thank you.
Yeah.
Please stay safe.
Makes sense.
So we had a worker that was involved in a workers' compensation claim. She slipped and fell, which nobody's seen, and she was struggling with her case. And it was almost absurd because the doctors that were giving the notices said she couldn't sit longer than 10 minutes and couldn't stand longer than 10 minutes. She couldn't bend. She couldn't do this. She couldn't do that. All from the slip and fall.
Well, that's a whole nother case. There are notorious slip and fall agents all over the country here whose professional job is to be a con man and slip and fall and get a quick settlement.
So she gets referred to an attorney. Right. And the attorney says, let me take a look at your paycheck stub. And before you know
it... She's saying, paycheck stub? I slipped and fell. What's that have to do with this?
Yeah, before you know it, we end up getting a letter from the state. You know, a PAGA claim has been made. And they accuse us of, I think, 9 different infractions.
Private Attorney General Act.
Attorney General Act. And we had to turn over documentation and information.
Which wasn't free or cheap.
Not at all.
You got to go pay somebody.
We had
to
go
audit.
Through the time card. You know what the worst part was we did not have our employees punch in and out for lunch unless they left the building.
Oh no, Tom, tell me that's not true.
Well, we wanted to show them we trusted them.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, if somebody went to the microwave 2 minutes early or somebody was talking, you know, and
2 minutes longer.
2 minutes longer. We weren't going to dock them for that. That was not our style.
We're adults.
We're
adults. Family.
We're family.
Frowned upon in California.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. So you weren't even having them check in. And
we weren't having them check in and check out. And so, you know, it might have worked for us, might have not worked for us, but we had a lunch bell that went off. So they said because of the lunch bell that went off, this is when the employees felt they had to take their lunch. So we were past 5 hours, and because of that, we were in violation.
Wow. And you couldn't go back and say, no, everybody agreed to this. Let's give everybody a sign of thing. Come
doesn't
on.
Doesn't matter.
Can the employees waive that? Can they say, no, we like this?
No, they can't. And you know, the... maybe, Rob?
Yeah, so to jump in, the standard for taking a lunch is an employer must provide a lunch. So employees individually can say, I can take it late, I can take it short. But when you get that PAGA letter, you know, they're going to assume that every lunch break that's not perfectly compliant on your time records is wrong.
Because you'd have to prove otherwise. They'd have to almost go through and sign an affidavit for everyone and say, on Tuesday, no, that was me. I said I wanted to leave late.
Right. Exactly.
More record keeping, more bookkeeping. So, you know, what ends up happening is they find out on our safety incentive, we didn't calculate that correctly. We didn't calculate it correctly in the overtime rate.
This little bonus, this little t-shirt, this little free lunch you were giving people who...
This little bonus was not calculated correctly. So between the bonus...
Well, how was it not correct? I don't understand. How could it not be
Rob?
Correct?
Yeah, let me jump in here.
This
I'll try
is a good
to put
one.
Everyone to sleep. Right. When you pay someone overtime, so in California that has anything over 8 hours or in a day or anything...
And is overtime anything extra too you give them, like an incentive or a bonus?
Right, yeah. So when you pay someone overtime, is you know, anything over 8 hours, over 40 hours in a week...
Use $10 as an example so everybody can see the math.
So, but the important premise is that... It's not 1.5 times the hourly rate of pay. It is 1.5 times the regular rate of pay. And the way the regular rate was explained to me when I first started practicing was that it's like a soup. Assume everything goes into the soup. Sometimes you don't put some things in, but default it goes in. So things that go into the regular rate of pay are, of course, hourly, commissions, per diem. So all these different types of things go in. And importantly,
Whether you pay somebody per diem or not, these are just the kind of things they expect to see in the soup, right?
Exactly, right. And so, and the multiple is 1.5 times whatever that soup is, whatever that pot of money is.
One time, 1.5 times for what? For a penalty? Or
yeah, so for when you pay someone overtime, it's not 1.5 times 10 out, 10 bucks an hour. It's 1.5 times all of that compensation.
Oh, I see. Oh, so that's what potential compensation.
Exactly, right. So here's the important thing is that discretionary bonuses are not in the regular rate of pay. Non-discretionary bonuses are in the regular rate. So you would say discretionary bonus, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds like a discretionary program to me. No, not so much. Indeed, this is how far some cases have gone with what discretion means. A legal rule is that employers must maintain discretion as to the fact and amount of payment up until very near the time that it is given away. Oh, here's my favorite case to cite on this example. It's public, so I can talk about it. I believe it was Best Buy Stores had what was called a Bravo program, and managers would walk around and give people the equivalent of a gold star for doing whatever, anything a manager liked.
Bravo.
And so those names would go into a hat. At the end of the month, they pull a name out of the hat, and they get a $50 gift card.
Okay.
Multiple levels of discretion built into this program.
Right. I can decide who, it's arbitrary. You're doing a good job. You get to get your hat, the name in the hat here.
The card,
very discretionary.
Card was pulled out near the end of the month.
Right, random.
And so the court said non-discretionary bonus because the amount was always set.
So even though the people who were chosen.
Yeah, that's what happened with our safety incentive. It became non-discretionary.
So because it's non-discretionary, it should have been calculated. When you're figuring overtime, that little bit amount should have been thrown in.
Back in.
So when I go 1.5, it should be their wage plus this little bit of.
How would it work out? If I gave them a $10 discretionary, non-discretionary bonus, what would the math be on that, Rob?
I have a calculator that I built into this. I like my Excel. I'm not a great math person. I could do the exact math.
Give us an example.
But the point is, essentially, it ends up being pennies on the dollar. But let's put it this way. If you have a $10 safety incentive bonus, you'd have to calculate the number of hours, overtime hours worked in the period. And then you would try to say, look, you've already paid 1.5 times the hourly rate.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to go back and say, well, if I had added that $10 into all the money they made in that period and multiplied that little amount by 1.5, you're talking about 10, 12 cents maybe.
Pennies.
But again, the fact it was wrong. Doesn't matter how much. It was wrong because you didn't add this. This thing wasn't non-discretionary, this little bonus that they could get, this little free gift card for being safe. That was non-discretionary because it was a fixed amount. And it wasn't completely arbitrary. And therefore, it should have been added into the wage and overtime calculations, even if it only amounted to pennies. And because it wasn't, what happened?
Well, again, we're going back to the 250,000 employers example.
Right.
How many of these employers are going to know that? I mean, you talk about a small flower shop that employs 7 or 8 people, and they did a great job. They delivered more flowers than they ever did, and they came back in time, and they were safe. And you say, hey, you know what? Here's a gift card. Take your wife out tonight for dinner, and that gift card was $50. You know what? That gift card better be put in there. And they better calculate that in.
When they calculate their other wages
and
overtime.
And if they don't, they could have a huge problem on their hands.
So in trying to do something good, you did something bad that can be exploited by somebody if they want to. When they dig this out, some attorney who's trying to ding you, hit you, and hold you up for as much as he can get. And so in your case, what happened?
What
employee started this?
The long and short of is that it cost Timely $1 million. And believe this or not, the final settlement amount and everything, which I can't disclose anything as of today, is not going to be until October. And this lawsuit started in December of 2016.
Wow. So an employee came to you and said, everybody's nightmare, and said, I slipped and fall. Nobody saw it. They're struggling to win this case. They get a smart attorney, and the attorney says, let's forget the slip and fall stuff. There's bigger money. There's bigger fish to fry.
Right.
Show me your pay stub. Show me this. They found out that you guys are giving a little safety bonus, and that should have been figured into their wage calculations. And because it wasn't, even though it would have meant pennies, it means $1 million to you.
$1 million to us. And think about what we could have done You know,
with $1 million,
yeah. Factory improvements, more wages for employees.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, there's a
healthcare, more additional healthcare benefits or whatever you do or don't give. I mean, there's a lot of things you could employees would love to do with that $1 million.
We give healthcare benefits. We have matching 401k. I mean, we feel we're a good company that does a lot for their employees. And we were being treated, especially by the state.
What did the rest of your employees say when this happened? Because this $1 million you paid out went to who? Let's clarify that again. The $1 million, whatever the number, finally, right. I know the settlement's still up in the air, whatever. But let's say it's $1 million. Who got it? She got it?
Well, no. Again, what she would get would be maybe $1,500. The employee...
That's the outrageous part. This was there to protect the employees,
right,
and to penalize the employers and hold them accountable to reasonable standards here. It doesn't seem to be too reasonable.
Most cases turn out that about a third of the money gets divvied out to the employees, and that third of money that gets divvied out to the employees is spread them out amongst the 200. But since the case went back 4 years, we had 100 employees...
Came and went during that period.
Came and went during that time period. So you got about 300 employees in the class. They have all these other additional expenses.
And the two-thirds got eaten up by who?
State gets eaten up by the attorneys.
You said the benefits people pay. There's somebody got to hire to pay the benefits out.
Right, the checks. The administrator. Right. You got administrators. You got all this different stuff to deal with.
So a seemingly minor mistake gets discovered through this process. Gets turned into a major $1 million fine or penalized penalty or settlement or whatever you call it. And in the process, not much goes to the employees.
And nobody's complained about this. I mean, we never had anybody come up to us and say, you know, we don't like the lunch hour. This just isn't working out.
Right.
And
in fact, it was done with their excitement, with their cooperation.
With their cooperation. And so now today... Timely has no flexible work schedule.
No.
You start at 6 or you start at 8. It's one of the two.
And you all got to go at
the same. And you all take a lunch and at the same time.
And what did you do to your safety bonus?
Safety incentive is gone. No more safety incentive.
Wow. How did anybody benefit from that?
Oh,
except the attorneys.
It ruined the culture of the company.
Yeah. I'll bet it.
It destroys company cultures. And what ends up happening is you have the minority, again, making decisions for the majority. And the minority is a lot of these really bad employees. The bad seeds are making it very difficult on all the good employees that show up on time to work every day, that want to give the extra, that want to do things. And when you have somebody come up to you and say, you know, Tom, my daughter's playing soccer today and I don't want to miss the game. Do you mind if I start a little bit earlier and, you know... I leave early, and I miss one of my breaks.
Right.
I can't do that anymore. They have to take their break. They have to take their lunch.
Wow.
You know, you can't work with these employees, and it's totally, totally unfair. And that's not how this country was built.
Well, I'll tell you what else is unfair is we got to take a break in the middle of the story here because we got to pay some bills. We got to talk about the sponsor of the show, and we got to give everybody a chance to digest this. So let's do that and come back and hear more about your amazing odyssey that led you to create this organization. All that and more when we come back here on the California Labor Law Odyssey Show. And as we break, we want to remind everybody that there is an organization behind this that you can find out more about. You can join the California Business and Industrial Alliance, CABIA, as we keep calling it here. It's a new trade organization, been around a year or so, founded by business executives like the gentleman speaking to us today, and entrepreneurs like you and me who are tired of complaining about the state's hostile job creation climate and ready to do something about it. And by we mean hostile, we mean these kinds of ridiculous labor law stipulations, this 1,000-plus labor law digest that can get so easily misused and turned into, I'm going to call it a holdup for money. So, CABIA is seeking members for its interest coalition of businesses. We'd love you to check us out. CABIA, CABIA.org. Go check it out. See what you can learn about the liabilities looming for your organization and those like you. And hopefully some things you can do about it. All right, so what did you do about it after you got hit with this and you fought it? It must have been a shock when you found out what kind of liability you're facing.
Oh, it's terrifying. And you sit there and you worry daily about it. And you're dealing, you know, with attorney calls.
How are we going to find $1 million bucks?
Yeah. I mean, it's devastating to anybody that's been hit through it.
How did you pay it? Did you have $1 million bucks? Did you have to raise prices? Did you have to borrow money?
Well, you can't raise prices because we're business to business and we're competing with, you know, other manufacturers across the United States right. and in China. So it becomes very difficult.
How did you take that hit? Do most businesses have $1 million bucks laying around ready for a rainy day like this?
Most businesses end up in payment plans.
Right.
Oh, so, payment plans. Okay. Yeah. So, I didn't know you could do a payment plan. Oh, of course. Let's make it convenient.
Plans attorneys will take their money any way they can get it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So a payment plan set up, and we're into this, and we're going to have to figure this in. This comes out of our bottom line profit. We were going to improve the facility. We were going to invest in new equipment. We were going to hire some more people. We were going to expand. We were going to do something good. And that gets delayed or dropped.
Well, many years ago when I was a young man, growing up in the Detroit area.
Yes, where we both come from here.
That's
we
right.
share that heritage.
That's right. So, you know, I learned a long time ago, if you don't.
By the way, it's Detroit, not Detroit. So let's get this correct here.
Yeah, I got a more emphasis on the E.
It's Detroit.
I learned a long time ago, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
And it was. Say that again. I like that. I've never heard that before. That's something my father would have said. Yeah.
If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for
anything. You'll fall for anything. Okay.
And I said, this is really an atrocity, what's happening here. So I started to reach out to local trade organizations, national trade organizations.
The chambers, the business, you must be some manufacturing alliances or something you guys belong to, or manufacturing groups.
Well, I reached out to a lot of different folks, and they didn't know that much about PAGA, and they were not that interested. It was not in their wheelhouse.
Is that because this only exists in one state? Is that because... Well, it's not new. It's been around since 2004. Must be lots of...
It's only recently been used by plaintiff's attorneys. This remained dormant for a long time.
Okay.
Probably the last 4 to 5 years.
Yeah,
somebody woke up and said, hey, there's money there.
There's big money there.
And so a whole group of category of these predatory attorneys that we all fear started popping up. And they don't have to do much to get this money, I'll bet.
Nothing.
They write a couple nasty letters, they do a quick review, and they say, we think there's this kind of dough laying out there.
Listeners, here's the reality. Between $50,000 and $75,000 per employee is what that trial lawyer is thinking. When they look at your business and they look at your company, they're saying, you got 100 employees, I'm going to get you for about $750,000.
And you're saying every company out there, big, little, small, is probably at risk.
There are thousands and thousands of companies that are being sued. There are nonprofits that are being sued. You know, Salvation Army, Goodwill Industries.
They got sued?
Humane Societies.
I have a PAGA case right now, and I can't divulge it because it's in confidential settlement negotiations. Let's put it this way. The organization provides special services for people with AIDS that are too dangerous or too sick to be housed in a medical... I'm trying to keep the client confidential. Long story short...
They're trying to help really sick people.
The nonprofit helps people with AIDS, and they got hit with a PAGA lawsuit, and it's probably going to cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars.
All right, so everybody's susceptible to this.
Everybody's susceptible.
Why don't we know this? Why are we all walking around blind, stupid, and dumb here and thinking
people,
we're safe?
People are afraid to speak out. I'm in the middle of a case. I don't want to make any trouble. I don't want it to look like I'm anti-labor. You know, and when I started reaching...
Or if I raise my hand, maybe more stuff will come down.
More suits will come. We have members of our organization who have been sued multiple times.
Oh, jeez.
2, 3, 4 times. And you'd say, well, didn't they learn the lesson the first time? Doesn't work that way. One group was a set of salespeople that didn't have a commission agreement in place. One group was a set of drivers that they weren't documenting their lunches correctly. One group was a set of warehouse workers.
Wow.
People just don't understand it. So, you know, I started reaching out to a lot of the local politicians,
yeah.
and they did not understand it. They did not know, what is this? I haven't heard anything. Well, yeah, there is something. Well, people are too interested in things that aren't helping business. And that's why I started the California Business and Industrial Alliance. I reached out to Garcetti's office.
Right.
So,
Gil,
you know,
Garcetti, the...
Says, well, it's a... And I never got to talk to him, you know, because he's too high and mighty for us.
Okay.
So, you know, and... What ends up happening is
Let's not be bitter here. Let's not be nasty.
Well, I got to talk to some of his underlings,
yeah.
and, you know, pretty much they says, hey, it's a state issue. There's nothing we can do. Yes, there is something you can do. You've got people in Los Angeles, your city getting hit. You can at least speak out about it and support some kind of a change.
But there's so many groups that supposedly speak for, I'm thinking of the U.S., whatever they call it, there's the United States,
Chamber of Commerce?
Yeah, the chambers, the local chambers, national chambers, all that kind of stuff.
Back to the mentality of what's going on here. The city of Los Angeles is more interested in naming the city Indigenous Day instead of Columbus Day.
Yeah,
well. Well, what about the businesses? We don't care either way. We'd like some help and some support.
And truthfully, every politician, we have lots of them come through here, left, right, or center, nobody's saying anti-small business. Whether they are or aren't, that's not something they're...
Might be talking about it, but they're not doing anything about it. Yeah. And you know, I did reach out to the California Chamber of Commerce, and I said, hey, guys, and they said, oh, I've read a couple of your op-eds, and, you know, we might have you come speak at a couple events. And I thought, boy, this is exciting. I can't wait to do this. Well, I got a link, you know, and an email, and I can do that if I give them between $20,000 and $100,000.
And what?
And at that point, I said, I can start my own organization, and I'm going to do this on my own. I'm not a career politician, and I'm not a career trade group guy. I'm a businessman, and I know what businesses need right now. And businesses need a real voice, somebody that's going to say,
yes,
hey, this is enough. Let's do something about it.
And that's the power of this podcast. You now have a voice, and we'll turn it into a YouTube and other things. You have the power to tell your own story directly to your members and to the public at large. So what do you want them to hear?
Well, I think the main thing is they have to really realize there's so many of these lawsuits, and so many people are getting hit. They're not alone. Rob was with us up in San Jose on Monday, and that was the one comment that one of those owners made that got hit with a PAGA lawsuit. He said, I thought I was alone in this.
Yeah, never heard of it. No, none of my friends know anything about it.
You're not alone, and people are just getting creamed over these things, and it can be anything. It can be a commission agreement that isn't written. It can be late lunches. It can be a misclassified incentive. It could be a misclassified bonus.
Which all, when they really get settled and said and done, don't amount to a lot of money.
No.
The employees didn't lose a lot. In fact, maybe they gained some flexibility or freedom or some other things out of it. But it only takes one disgruntled employee to bring this to light, to hire an attorney, notify the state, because they have to notify the state first that they're going to file a lawsuit, and the state does nothing, then they get to go forward, and now they don't just represent themselves, they represent the state of California attacking you.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting about these labor laws, or these employment laws as they were, is that it's a unique area of the law where intent does not matter. Almost any other lawsuit that you do, level of culpability, you want to do something wrong, or at least you were negligent here.
Right, right.
This is strict liability. This is the same as putting a product in the stream of commerce.
Right.
You don't have to prove that they were up to no good, they should have known better, they were negligent, or that they knew what they were doing was a violation. This is...
And most of the people that are getting
outrageous.
Hit aren't negligent, because, you know, they wouldn't have companies that have been around for 15, 20, 25, 30 years. They wouldn't have employees that have been around so long.
So what kinds of things, labor violations, can they... Give me 6 or 7 or 8 or 10. You say the labor code's 1,000 pages long, so potentially there's thousands of things they can find?
There's a lot. You know, there's one quick case I wanted to bring up, and it's the Starbucks case.
Right.
And the Starbucks case is kind of interesting, because this was a organization that tried to fight it because they thought it was wrong,
right,
and then ended up losing. So what the case was, they had a manager that worked there. And what happened was the manager would close the store every night. When he closed the store, he would have to punch out, go turn the lights off, lock the door behind him, and he would walk to the parking lot. But he would walk the women, the waitresses, or the waiters. They would all walk to the parking lot together.
Sure.
Across the street.
Right.
And what ended up happening was he claimed that he wasn't getting paid for that.
All this extra time.
All this extra time.
After he clocked out.
And this extra time amounted to anywhere between about 20 seconds to, I think it was a minute 20. Is that right, Rob?
Sounds about right. Yeah,
it was about a minute.
When they tried to calculate the amount of time he was taking to shut this thing down and walk out the store.
They call it, give us the lawyer fancy word for this.
Yeah, so, well, the defense to this is de minimis amounts of time.
De minimis is a Latin.
What is de minimis?
It's a Latin word meaning.
It's a Latin word, I mean, like small.
Less than minimum, yeah.
Yeah, it's a essential. So, under federal law.
Too small to worry about.
Exactly.
It's not a fancy drink, is it?
No, it's not. No, but we can create one.
A cream de minimis? Yeah.
So, for 80 years, federal courts have recognized what's called the de minimis doctrine. And the idea is, it's a general statement of common law in the United States, that the law is not going to bother itself with stupid little things. And so,
if it takes 3 seconds longer to do a task, we're not going to dock you for those 3 seconds.
Exactly. So for 80 years, it's been the case, been codified for 50. And that was the defense that Starbucks put forward, saying, look, this is de minimis. It's hard to track. It's hard to figure out.
And they actually won that case, correct?
Below. And it was appealed. And so the California Supreme Court essentially said, no, this longstanding federal defense does not apply in California. So for all intents and purposes, although the ruling, I don't want to oversimplify.
California is so special.
Yeah, the California Supreme Court has its own way of doing things. And so essentially said, no, that defense does not apply in California. And there are some situations, there are some things that the court left open. But essentially, for all intents and purposes, employees must be paid for every second of their time.
1 second.
And here's what's important.
Even if it's 1 second.
Here's what's important. The standard in California is not whether the employee reports the time. It's whether or not the employer should have known the employee was working. So if an employee chooses not to clock in and clock out, but you had some reasonable way of knowing that they might have been working, maybe you overheard that he walked someone to their car, that's the standard. Again, intent is not the standard. It is, should you have known? And that standard is very, very tough to beat in California.
Yeah, and you know, going back when, again,
I'm shaking my head, folks. Go
my
ahead.
My Detroit heritage, right?
Right.
I worked for a company called Wells Cargo for a few years, and
yeah.
Wells Cargo sold dishes, dishware, and that. And we would close the store, and we would actually walk in the mall. We would walk the female manager to make the deposit, and then we would walk with the female manager and cashiers to the parking lot. And
keep
I don't
them
think
safe, yeah.
any of us expected to be paid for doing that, but unfortunately, there's an employee at Starbucks that feels he should be paid to do that, and an attorney feels that way, and a California Supreme Court judge.
So, how much
feels that
did
way.
They get? What was the settlement, and how much did that?
This was a judgment.
Yeah.
So,
judgment means it actually went to court.
But you know how much the employee got, don't you, Rob? He's going to get
off the top of my head. I don't. I know it's some like $148.
It was $600. It was $670, and the Supreme Court judge said, "Hey." Over 4 years, $670, he could have bought some groceries with that. Doesn't look at it's cost Starbucks tens of millions of dollars to defend and fight this case.
And some important nuances
that
to that are this case was not prospective, right? So here's what's important is sometimes when the California Supreme Court does something or the legislature does something, they say, is it a change in the law or does it clarify the law?
Right.
If it's a change, we're only looking at you going forward.
Right.
And so Starbucks tried to argue, look, this has been a federal rule for decades.
De minimis, too minor
least,
to worry
it must
about.
Apply going. We get it. If that's the rule, we'll apply it going forward.
We don't like it, but if that's the new rule, we'll do
not
it.
Not what California Supreme Court said, and I guarantee every employer in California is now exposed to liability, because let me walk you through the penalty scheme that this creates.
Okay.
An employee works a de minimis amount of time, which we've covered can mean just about anything. They don't have to report it if you have reason to know they worked it.
A few minutes.
So let's say that employee now receives a pay stub that does not have that time they didn't maybe report you didn't know about and not reflected on it.
They didn't report it, you didn't report it, but it's there.
Now you have inaccurate pay stubs. Some would argue, we fight this often at my firm, but the penalty scheme for inaccurate pay stubs under the statute of California is $50 for the first wrong one, $100 for everyone thereafter. This goes back 3 years. Under PAGA.
So if you get paid twice a month, it's $150 a month?
It would be $200 a month after the first one. So it's 50, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100.
And this goes
up to $4,000.
Up to $4,000 per employee.
Now, that's just for the statutory penalty. Now, under PAGA, the first one, inaccurate, would be $250. Everyone thereafter.
There's an additional penalty?
Additional penalty and $1,000 for everyone thereafter. So you're talking about, If you're paid weekly, you're talking about $51,250 for a year. And then, we're not done. Let's say you terminate that employee.
$50,000.
If you're paid weekly, it would be closer to $26,000.
You know, I'm just thinking about something. I don't mean to interrupt, but we kind of had to park far away from here. So based on where we parked and when the show started.
That's right.
Is there? Do I have a lawsuit here, Rob? Think
if Paul was our employer, he'd be in big trouble.
Nope.
No, we're not done. Let's say that employee is let's say that employee is terminated. And you don't pay them that 2 or 3 cents that they're owed. Now their wages continue for 30 days. And if the person makes, you know, because even though you didn't know you're supposed to pay them, they were not paid all wages upon termination. And so that person would make an extra month. A month and a half of pay.
So you came up with three levels. There's a statutory
statement,
which was what $150
for the first one, $100 everyone thereafter.
So let's say you get paid weekly for a weekly employee. That's $400 a week. That's $400 four of these a month. That's $400 for a month, and they can go back for a year's worth of that, up to $4,000.
Correct.
So I got $4,000. And then the PAGA on top of it is another, like you said, like up to $1,000.
$250 for the first one. So I've actually done this calculation.
Yeah.
One year of pay stub penalties, excluding the fact that it might go further.
If all these things, if you've got the
it's
statutory.
$25,400 for just 1 year of problems of pay stubs are wrong. Just
and
pay
that's
stubs.
Just
for
penalties.
One employee.
And that's just penalties.
Not
right.
The hour you own.
And keep in mind,
the late lunch.
You have to, keep in mind, you do not have to. There's a. Mm-hmm. I don't want to understate the law here, but you don't have to prove any type of real injury to get these claims.
That's what I'm saying. Usually in a lawsuit, somebody has to suffer.
And no intent is required.
Right. You just got to show somebody knew or had
so
reason
somebody,
to know.
Somebody reached out to us and they were actually pennies off because they were transferring things from smaller business, they were transferring it from QuickBooks into the time clock system.
Right.
And because of that, it's costing them dearly.
So your quick calculation of the potential penalties on a weekly employee could be as much as like $25,000 per employee, and you got 100 employees, that's 25.
I've got the calculation. It's $2,540,000.
Because you were slightly off in calculating.
That's just for the pay stubs. That's just, no, the way the
they
waiting,
stack the violations.
The waiting
they
time penalties
them.
Would be on top of that.
Right.
Guys, this is shocking.
And let me tell you about abuse. So now I started this nonprofit organization, and we've got close to 100 members, mm-hmm. and I appreciate all you members. Anyone that's listening, thank you for believing in us.
Okay.
I get calls every day now. I got a call from somebody in Oakland, California. He's had a security company for, I don't know, maybe 15 years now. He is a Iraqi war veteran.
Right.
He was a police officer, upstanding person in the community.
Good guy,
running a good company. He had an employee that came and worked for him for 5 days in training. And 2 months later, he got a PAGA lawsuit. And the 5-day employee said, I didn't get my lunch on time.
And you can't just say, here's $50, go away.
No.
Here's your lunches.
No.
It's now turned into, because you got attorneys who want big bucks, you got administrators who want to get big bucks, you got a whole community of people that are going to feed off of this.
Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I'm telling you, it is every
rampant.
I'm getting calls.
All right, well, we're going to tune in each and every week as we start to tell these stories, and we hope that people will tune in, because I don't believe them. I know people listening shaking their heads saying, this can't be. This can't be. Why have I never heard of this? Why is this not in front page news? Why isn't every trade group in the country fighting about this, talking about this? Why does it take a new organization like yours? Why? Answer that. Why is this so under the radar?
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, you're going to help bring it to more light on your radio show.
And we're going to do that. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to start standing up and telling these stories. Each and every week, we're going to bring in people, real life stories, real life examples, and you won't believe them. You will not believe them. Believe me. Tune in each and every week to hear what is really happening right there. And more than the horror story, what can be done, right? We're going to try. There is some hope. There is some ways to maybe avoid these, lessen them, fight them, and maybe just band together and change the law. How about that?
That's what we want to do.
Okay. And that's an important thing that CABIA does. A lot of education. Come to a meeting. Watch our presentations. We do try to educate and teach people how to at least minimally comply with the law to keep your target off of your back without a plaintiff's attorney.
Right. To make it harder to get sued. and to more likely that you won't suffer these kinds of massive fines and penalties. And maybe by banding together and speaking up, we can change what seems to be an out-of-control situation.
We need to join forces. We all need to be one. If we can rally and organize, you know, we
There's
can
hope.
Accomplish it.
There's hope. All right. Tune in each and every week to hear the most amazing stories to people and businesses, business owners just like you and what they're going through today. You won't believe any of them. And if that doesn't wake you up, nothing will. Because if we don't wake up, this is going to continue to grow and turn into a major problem for all of us here. Thank you guys for coming so much.
Thanks, Paul.
Tell us how
Thanks, Rob, for being on the show.
Tell us how they reach both of you or organizations or whatever if they want to hear more.
Cabia.org, CABIA.org, and call me.
All right, and Rob, you work for a labor firm.
Yeah, we're general counsel for Cabia, but you know, go ahead and go through Cabia if you want to get to us. I do work at the law firm Epstein Becker and Green.
And you guys work with other employers trying to fight these things.
Yes, we specialize in employment litigation, and you know, but come to Tom first. You know, share your woes, and then you know he'll get you to me if you need me.
Okay, well, get this on your smartphone. Get this, subscribe to this podcast, iTunes and other places as we get this up and going here. This is just episode 2. We wanted to, episode 1, go back and listen to it. Tells you about the law itself, its history, and its abuse, its growth. Episode 2 was just to tell you a little bit about the men behind this organization and how they suffered and why it forced them to take action. We hope you will, too, by, if nothing else, taking the action of listening each and every week to the California Labor Law Odyssey. Thanks, guys.